Good evening, good evening. Oh my God, it's Friday, the 13th of June, 2025. Oh, the Knights Templar, 12th century. That's where it all comes from, apparently. So welcome to your Friday night live. And yes, the only fan noises should be coming from you, the lovely audience. It's beginning to get quieter. Excellent. All right. So I hope you're having an interesting week. An interesting week is certainly being happening to everyone, particularly those of our friends in America. So how can I help you? I suppose, given the direness of the situation, it is probably worth me breaking a rule or two and being willing to talk politics, if you like, or geopolitics, or war, or anything like that. I can certainly help if you like. And if you have questions or comments or anything you want to talk about, I am all ears, I am all yours. I did a show today. Gosh, what a day of work. So I went this morning to work on my novel, which I finished chapter 11, about 45,000 words. It's going to be a long one, though, I'll tell you that. And then I went for a hour 40 hike, where I answered a challenging question from a listener about how moral philosophy is different from online sex work. Not something I was sure I was going to have to do in my life as a whole, but I guess some people have questions. I came back, spent some time with the old fam, did some research in case you all wanted to talk about, oh, I don't know, what is there going on in the world that might be interesting for you to listen to or know about? Is it anything to do with, say, I don't know, an attack on Iran by Israel? So let's look at what may be going on. Full disclosure, one of my favorite families when I was a teenager was headed by a Persian man. Of course, he was from Iran, but he insisted that it be referred to, which I understand, as Persia, which I sympathize with. A woman I dated in my 20s whose family was from Mumbai also was Persian, and she was fairly light-skinned. She was almost Italian-looking, actually pretty much Italian-looking. So I do have some history with regards to sympathy with understanding of the Persians, historical Persians. I have a great admiration for a lot of aspects of the Persian culture, and that, of course, was taken over in 79 with the Iranian fundamentalist Islamic takeover, where the leaders were replaced with mullahs and the women went into their beekeeper outfits, and the world of the Persians kind of sank into a semi-middle-aged kind of perspective, which was not, of course, ideal, to put it mildly. Oh, yes, thank you for your tip, Joseph, freedomain.com/donate. Somebody says, I am from Iran. Oh, so, yeah, I am from Iran and also like to be called Persian. Yes, that's right. That's right. So, let's talk about the origins of dysfunction and war in society on the Iranian side. So, let's look at the prevalence of physical abuse, emotional abuse, and neglect in both genders. Is quite something. The prevalence of physical abuse, emotional abuse, and neglect in both genders differed from 9.7 to 67.5%, 17.9 to 91.1%, and 23.6 to 80.18, respectively. The pooled estimate of the prevalence of child physical abuse in both genders was 53.59%, which is really, really high. The pooled estimate of prevalence of child emotional abuse was almost 65%. Child neglect was 41% almost, and that's not great. Now, Iran has a population of more than 75 million. Some places I've read 90 million. Some places I've read average IQ of 85. Sometimes I've read higher. So 31% of the population is younger than 19 years of age. And a study conducted in Tehran, the capital city of Iran, revealed the prevalence of 17.5% for physical abuse and prevalence of 36.4% and 49.46% for neglect and emotional abuse. Another study showed that the prevalence of emotional abuse, physical abuse, and neglect was 78%, 56%, and 39% in Zanjan, respectively. The prevalence of childhood sexual abuse is estimated as high as 32.5%, one out of three children. So that's not ideal. Existing laws do not specifically address child sexual abuse. Child abuse in Iran increased 12.5% in 1 year alone, 2019. Child abuse in Iran has risen during the coronavirus pandemic due to rising social ills like poverty and mental health problems. Violence against children has increased fivefold before the coronavirus crisis. The cases involve physical violence against children and even rape. The difference today is that the beating of children by their parents is constantly being repeated. Another issue in Iran, of course, which we know affects IQ. Iran has an almost 40% consanguinity marriage. Consanguinity is cousin marriage and other closely related marriages. It's very high. Russia is 0.1%. Iran is almost 40%. So, Mike Cernovich posted, I could not get confirmation of it, but he posted that Iran had a policy of letting high IQ people leave the country. I don't know that that's true. Maybe he's got some contacts, of course, in the Persian community, I think based on marriage. So maybe that's true. I couldn't get any particular confirmation of it, but whether you accept that it is official or just unofficial, there has been a massive brain drain, of course, from Iran or the Persian region since the late 70s. So that is a very big issue, and it just means that it is, you've got a relatively low IQ population in general in battle against the Israelis, who are some of the smartest most defensively aggressive people on the planet. I don't know that it's going to be much of a conflict. I mean, I don't know that it's going to be much of an equal fight over time. You sort of think of the pager thing and what happened, was it yesterday, where they had 200 Israeli fighters scouring the skies over Iran and decapitating military personnel, nuclear personnel, that they're sort of heads of these things. And it's funny, of course, it's just a coincidence, but I wrote about this almost 20 years ago in my book, Practical Anarchy, and I also wrote about it in my novel, The Future, which was, I guess, 4 or so years ago, that the way that you wage war most intelligently is to target the leaders of your enemies. Don't target the ground troops, target the leaders. And this, of course, seems to have happened. Again, I'm not saying this is anything to do with me, but it is an interesting coincidence about this. So there are some estimates. The odds of the Israel-Iran conflict spreading into a broader regional or global war involving multiple states or sustained multi-front fighting are low to moderate, with a rough probability range of 15 to 30%. So low likelihood, 15 to 20%, the conflict remains limited to Israel and Iran, with missile/drone exchanges fizzling out due to depleted stocks, diplomatic pressure, or Iran's weakened capacity. Regional and global powers stay out, and proxies play a minimal role. Moderate likelihood, 20 to 30%, escalation occurs due to a miscalculation, a significant Iranian attack on U.S. bases, Israeli strikes causing mass civilian casualties, or covert Russian/Chinese arms support. This could draw in limited proxy or regional involvement, but stops short of a full-scale war. High likelihood is less than 10%, a full-blown regional war involving major powers, U.S., Russia, China, or multiple states, is highly unlikely due to strange strategic constraints, economic stakes, and historical restraint. Iran, in its sort of current mullah-ruled form, is largely isolated from allies as a whole, and is viewed as a rogue state or a dangerous nation, even by the sort of the local powers that be. And please understand, I'm far from an expert in the Middle East, so I just wanted to sort of mention that as a whole. Let me just get to your comments here. Now, with regards to Israel and Iran, I mean, I obviously don't have any back channels, but of course, Israel has struck because, according to Israeli intelligence, however much you accept or don't accept that, I can't tell you anything because I don't have any answers that way. But they said that Iran was within weeks of getting a nuclear weapon. And now, I mean, I've been hearing about this since the early 90s. It seems like every year or two, it's like they're going to have a nuclear weapon within 5 years, 3 years, 6 years, 6 months, whatever, right? But the story from Israel is that Iran was imminently about to get a nuclear weapon. And given the hostility of the Iranian regime, who funds Hezbollah quite a bit, towards the Israeli state, a preemptive strike, it's something that they would justify according to that. Again, whether you believe it or not, I couldn't possibly tell you, but that is the official story. Now, as far as I understand it, Trump was opposed to the strike. He said, you know, let me work on the a diplomatic side and let's go that way. And he did not want the strike to occur. And the strike did occur. What that's going to do to American-Israeli relations remains to be seen. But it is pretty wild to see the change from when I was younger about the general components of the Middle East. Of course, when I was younger, there was the first Gulf War, and then, of course, the invasion of Iraq and so on. And people were pretty gung-ho for that kind of stuff in America. Of course, after 9/11, that was pretty, people were pretty gung-ho because they had basically been led to believe that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and had somehow been involved in 9/11, which I don't particularly think he was. 9/11 came out of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and they, of course, had been funded and trained by the CIA to fight against Russia in Afghanistan in the 80s, and then they turned on America for the ostensible reason that America had troops stationed in Saudi Arabia, which was considered holy land to the Mujahideen, and so there was that. So, yeah, so, I mean, gold is up, Bitcoin is down, but Bitcoin bounced back after the last sort of threat. And so, where does this go? I mean, Russia's probably not going to do much. They're bogged down in Ukraine. China has never had a history of directly engaging militarily in the Middle East, so they may offer Iran, you know, covert support by arming them or some sort of diplomatic support. But the idea that they would go in directly is quite unlikely. So I think that they got some advance warning in America and have decided to work as best as they can, or at least this is what they say. They've decided to work as best as they can to sit this one out, whether that means indirect support, probably. But the, so Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Jordan have never really wanted Iran to get nukes. And they've cooperated with Israel. They intercepted Iranian drones in April 2024 to prevent this from happening. Turkey and Pakistan, I mean, they support the Muslim causes, but they neither of them have signaled any intent to intervene militarily. And of course, Pakistan's got its own internal challenges, and Turkey has NATO ties, so that makes involvement kind of improbable. Now, of course, there was we don't know for sure, but according to Israel, they decapitated the leadership, both militarily and from a nuclear standpoint, because they said they were enriching the uranium far beyond what they need for civilian purposes, right? So they were thinking like 5% enrichment for purposes that are civilian based and power based, and they were going 50 to 90%, which means that it was aiming towards the idea of getting nuclear weapons rather than just having nuclear power. And then, of course, as is the case in war, the enemy gets a vote. There was some strike back. I think about 100 rockets were sent towards Israel, and apparently only 5 to 7 got through because of the Iron Dome and so on, or other ways that they have to counter these kinds of things. So, of course, the hope is that it is limited, that they have gotten their wish or their way, which is to prevent Iran from having these nuclear weapons and things go and quiet down and so on. But yeah, it is pretty wild to see how different the reaction is now as opposed to the past. There does seem, I mean, the weariness in the U.S. regarding Iraq and regarding Afghanistan is something that is very new, and it's fairly unprecedented, really. It's fairly unprecedented for the American population to be this weary of Middle Eastern entanglements, but the humbling, I won't say the humiliation, because, I mean, America achieved its military objectives. It's just that the relative freedoms that were hoped for were unable to be sustained for a variety of religious and population reasons, that the Middle East is not exactly the most fertile Ukrainian-style black soil ground for the emergence of a Jeffersonian-style republic. But given the failures, and you've probably seen this bitter meme that, you know, if you ever feel useless in your job, just remember it took the American military, you know, 20 years and trillions of dollars to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. And so this idea that it's like there's a bunch of seagulls eating some food, you run at them, they scatter, and then when you run past, they just come back, right? So there's this idea that it looks like you're doing something, everyone's gone, and then for reasons that we've talked about before, they generally tend to coalesce back into their previous shape. And it is, of course, my massive hope and goal that any thoughts towards something like colonialism is scrubbed from the Western mindset. That this white man's burden has just been an absolute, complete, and total fracking catastrophe for the West as a whole. And of course, if the seagulls scatter, so to speak, and I'm sorry to be talking about human beings as seagulls, it's just an analogy, but if the seagulls scatter when you're there, and then the moment you leave, they just come back, then really what's the point? I mean, you're not even really slowing things down that much. So there is a funny sort of sideswipe that happens in modern politics, which is the idea that if you're only supplying weapons or training, that you're somehow not involved. Now, of course, this is how things started out in the early 60s with Vietnam. It was just training, right? That's all that JFK was doing, just some training. But to me, just sort of my amateur non-military opinion, is that if you supply weapons to someone and you know that they're going to use it in an unjust fashion, or they're going to use it in a violent fashion, or because weapons would be used as a violent fashion, then you are part of it. Like if there are two cartels fighting and you supply weapons to one of the cartels engaged in a turf battle with the other cartel, would that not be being an accessory to a crime? So supplying weapons to a combatant's army is getting involved. And that's just it's a bad idea as a whole. I mean, I'm against war, unless it's a purely defensive war based upon immediate imminent invasion. I'm against war, of course. I mean, that doesn't really take much to say or take any particular intelligence to put forward. But this idea that you're not involved if you're only supplying weaponry and training, it's like you kind of are, at least legally, you would be in the eyes of most sort of Western common law practices. So, but people sort of think that it's a little asterisk. It's like, no, we're not, right? So personally, my particular prediction is that this is going to fade out. I don't know that it's an accident, other than, of course, if Iran was about to get these nukes, and that's why Israel did what it did. It probably is not an accident that it occurred under a Republican president, because under a Republican president, those on the right are more likely to agree and approve of military action as opposed to on the left. Each team likes their own military leaders. I mean, as you know, I did a whole presentation on Barack Obama back in the day. He was dropping bombs every 20 minutes throughout his entire presidency. It was 100,000 plus bombs, and I mean, just crazy stuff. And of course, people on the right were pointing out how bad that was. People on the left didn't mind it. In fact, they approved of it in some ways. And in the same way, if there is going to be military action in the Middle East, it seems to me more likely that it's going to happen under Trump than under a Democrat, because people have a loyalty to Trump that might surmount any skepticism or hostility they might have towards getting involved in the Middle East. So, personally, I mean, I guess I'm not beyond recruitment age in somewhere like Ukraine, but, and I'm obviously not in America, so I would say that if you are a young man in America, I wouldn't worry. I don't think it's going to escalate. I don't think the U.S. is going to get dragged in. And I think this was a particular decap strike to prevent the possible imminent formulation of a nuclear weapon. And I think now that that is done, or that seems to be done, there'll be some, obviously, some blowback from Iran. Iran has had all of these, oh, they're going to suffer terrible ends. It's just the usual bunch of chest thumping and posturing that occurs in these kinds of situations. But I would say that don't fret. And, you know, obviously keep your eye on it. I mean, I'm keeping my eye on it for sure. Don't fret, not much threat. And I think it will calm down. And I don't think there's going to be any particular escalation. I mean, China has a whole, like, we'll sit back and wait to win, right? China is just sit back and wait to win. They are patient. Remember the 500-year plans? I guess like mine. Turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. So I would not get too worried. And that means, and what's worrying going to do anyway, right? You know, worrying is based on the fantasy that you can control these things, and you really can't. All right. So Sode says, very nice to have you. Missed you while you were gone. To explain why we like to be called Persian. Quite simple, actually. We don't like the correlation between Iranians and modern-day Iran. And so much of our culture is based on Zoroastrian theology, which has nothing to do with Muslim culture that Iran has adopted. I don't know that it was adopted. Adoption seems to be more voluntary. She says, and Iranians marry their cousins because it is considered an honor within the culture to keep the bloodline going. It is why mental health problems are so high. Oh, yeah. I mean, this, I talked about this years ago, about some of the issues with the expat Pakistanis in the West and the issues around mental health. All right. I heard Israel, says someone, just wants more attention / power since the Gaza thing sizzled out. I don't believe that's true. Doesn't Israel have nuclear weapons, though, and assured mutual destruction mitigates large-scale conflict? Well, if you recall, in the Second World War, there was some, how can I put this as nicely as possible for once? There were some Japanese pilots, particularly in the Pacific conflict, not overly concerned with their own longevity. Yes, I think that's probably the best way to put it. They were not necessarily over-concerned with their own longevity. And so it may not be that, I mean, there are suicide bombers, right? So it may not be that mutually assured destruction works the same in all cultures, if that makes sense. I had a couple other notes. Let me just see if there's anything else of juicy note and import. But yeah, the child abuse, the consanguinity issues, these are not going to be great. Iran has experienced substantial emigration of its educated elite. A 2000 IMF report noted that between 150,000 and 180,000 specialists left annually, costing Iran an estimated $50 billion, equivalent to a significant portion of its oil revenue. The 1979 Cultural Revolution, which closed universities and purged non-Islamic influences, drove many academics abroad. economic stagnation, high unemployment, with only 75,000 of the 270,000 annual university graduates finding jobs, political crackdowns, such as those following the 2009 election protests, further fueled this exodus. By 2019, 3.1 million Iranians, or 3.8% of the population, had emigrated. So, you know, the government, of course, has made some efforts to retain talent. There was the Iran National Science Foundation in 2003. These have had limited success. So the brain drain is a real thing. And of course, we know the Pareto principle, that the square root of any, in a relative meritocracy, the square root of all participants in an endeavor produce half the value, right? So if you've got 10,000 people in a company, 100 of them are producing half the value, and 10 of them are producing half of that value. So you've got 10 out of 10,000 producing fully one quarter of the value of the entire organization of 10,000 people, which is why the high producers get paid so much and why people get paid so crazy high. So that is, of course, the case with regards to the brain drain. Every person who's smart could be 100 to 1,000 times more productive than the average person. So it is, so with regards to Iran is on the verge of developing nuclear weapons. 1992, Benjamin Netanyahu was prime minister back then, began publicly stating Iran was close to achieving nuclear weapons capability, a timeline of a few years. 1995, it said Iran was 3 to 5 years away. 2002, there was a discovery of Iran's secret nuclear facilities. Israel intensified warnings, officials claiming Iran could have a bomb within a few years. 2009, Netanyahu told the UN General Assembly Iran's nuclear program was advancing rapidly. 2012, there was an fairly infamous UN speech from Netanyahu with a cartoon bomb diagram, claimed that Iran was months away from enough enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon. That's 13 years ago. 2018, 2019, 2024, and then 2025, leading up to the June 13th strike. Israel's leadership, including Netanyahu and IDF chief Eyal Zamir, stated Iran was on the threshold of a nuclear breakthrough with enough enriched uranium for 9 bombs and advanced weaponization steps. So, the International Atomic Energy Agency has reported that Iran's uranium enrichment progress, such as 60% purity stockpiles by 2025, enough for theoretical weapons if further enriched to 90%. The IAEA and U.S. intelligence have consistently estimated that building an actual deliverable nuclear weapon would take around 6 to 18 months, even with sufficient material. So, of course, I have no particular way of interpreting the reality or factuality of any of these things. So, look into this. Very interesting. You want to look into the... it's really important to look... Well, I think it's very helpful to look into why the Tiananmen Square protests happened. As someone says, even before Netanyahu, the Israeli press was claiming Iran was months away from having nukes all the way back in the mid-80s, right? Right. I mean, all of this in general is the result of the environmental movement, right? We talked about this before, so I can keep this brief. But all of this, fairly primitive cultures and so on, don't produce a lot of economic value for reasons that are pretty clear to those who've listened for a while. But because the environmental movement, which is to some degree funded by Middle Eastern countries that want to retain a monopoly on the production and sale of oil, the environmental movement has prevented nuclear power, which would diminish America and the West's reliance upon foreign oil, and of course, it's diminished domestic drilling and production for oil, right? The sort of famous Sarah Palin drill, baby drill stuff. A little over-sexualized, but we can live with it. So, if you want to reduce the power of fairly primitive regimes in the Middle East, you have to have domestic production of oil. And so everyone who was saying, well, domestic production of oil is bad, they're simply taking the money from a relatively civilized economy and moving it to a relatively, I mean, uncivilized economy. It's just an IQ test. That's all, right? It's just, I don't want to see smokestacks, Three Mile Island, blah, 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 Chernobyl. And so out of sight, out of mind is simply, it goes to worse places. So I just wanted to mention that. And of course, if you have questions, comments, support for the show would be greatly, humbly, and deeply appreciated. But I wouldn't worry about this one as a whole. You may have a certain amount of concern given what happened in Ukraine versus the Russians. I guess relatively recently, where they had 100 plus drones that struck the Russian airfield thousands of miles inside of Russia because they snuck them in under the roofs of these pretend buildings on wheels. China has bought up a whole bunch of land around American military installations, which, well, I don't know. What are you going to do? It's so funny. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I could be completely talking about an armpit here, but I would not worry about it. And I think also the idea that Western intervention produces significantly better countries is no longer things that people believe in. And when that kind of belief goes puff the magic dragon ways, it's really hard politically to move that kind of thing forward. So I would not worry about it too much. And in fact, it could be that people are beginning to learn that you can't just transplant your culture to another country and make them just like you, right? I mean, this has been going on for half a millennia in the West. Well, we'll go to country Albania. We'll go to Albania. We'll give them our institutions. And they'll be just like us. Still have a bit of leftover. Something in my teeth. My apologies. Let's see if I can jet ski that out with a little coffee. All dead and gone. All right. Steph, how do I make female friends as a woman when all the women are going insane due to unstable world conditions and a lack of solid principles? Like, what advice do you give Izzy? I mean, be yourself and see who likes you. I mean, honestly, that I wish I could give you some big, deep philosophical, you know, voodoo that you can do, some like real philosophical. You just, in life, you just be yourself no matter what they say. You just have to be who you are and see who likes it. I wish I had some magical formula, how to be liked. I don't know that I'm really good at the how to be liked thing. I mean, I know how to do it, but I don't want the cost of it. I don't like the cost of it. You can't also import people and have them adopt your ways. Look at all the Mexico flags during the protests. Yeah. Yeah, because Mexico was in charge of California for about 20 years and did absolutely nothing with it. Apparently, it's still Mexican. You know, that meme of like the Mexican guy saying, ah, Mexico, viva Mexico, Mexico's the greatest. It's like, we're sending you back there. Oh no, my life is over. Well, you can't get free stuff as easily in Mexico. And Mexico has in its constitution that you can't change Mexico's demographics. I shouldn't laugh. It's just kind of funny. Nobody gets mad at that. But God forbid, right? All right. And of course, people forget that, you know, that the legal structure, whatever you transplant from the West, doesn't matter in particular if that's not founded in the beliefs of people. And people's beliefs don't change according to reason and evidence. I mean, I think I can fairly robustly say that, with the exception of we few, we happy few, and so on. So the Russian Constitution was fantastic. The Haitian constitution is great on paper, right? But on paper is sort of irrelevant. What matters is, you know, I mean, theoretically, the president is supposed to be the head of the military. It turns out there are like 700 judges who were higher than the president when it comes to the military. Thank you, Dylan. I appreciate that. All right. Any other questions, comments? I certainly have. I've been doing a lot of reading this very day or two. I've been doing some reading. Huh? What do you mean? Let me get in there. Let me get in here. Hang on a sec. Oh, I was born by the river in a little tent. Nope, that's not it. All right, sorry, because I was quite fascinated by... I've never been a huge Beach Boys fan, although I did actually see them many, many years ago in Toronto. I went with some friends, and we got back row seats, and I danced the sidewalk clean. I remember just dancing to it all night, and it was a lot of fun. Now, Brian Wilson... died a day or two ago. He was 82, and he was an absolute child of the 60s. So, just before I get into that, someone says, yeah, I guess the problem is the female friend question, that I don't care about lying to be liked. Like being nice. That's exactly why women ostracize me. As a woman, it's tough because my physiology kind of demands emotional connection with others, but I hate compromising so I don't hurt other people's feelings. So monk mode it is. So one of the things you can do is, I'm sure you've thought of this, I'm just putting this out as a general thought, but one of the things you can do is you can try and find groups or hobbies or activities that are more likely to be populated by people with a similar mindset, right? So, I mean, if you're conservative, you don't go to the quiche convention, you go to the gun show or something like that, or you go to a more fundamentalist church or something like that, right? So... I would say that it's important to pre-filter for people like yourself, right? So I think that's probably a good idea. Again, I'm sure you've thought of that, but don't just say, well, I've just got a random scattershot, find people, or just be completely alone. There's filtering mechanisms that you can do ahead of time. So my friends, let me ask you this. Give me a minus 10 to plus 10. Now, you know, zero to 10. Zero to 10, how much do you know about Brian Wilson of... sort of founder, lead singer, falsetto dude of the Beach Boys. What do you know? Because I want to sort of gauge how much people know about this guy. Zero to 10, zero, Brian who? To 10, I was his spleen throughout most of the 70s. What have we got here in terms of knowledge of Brian Wilson? Minus 10, zero, we got a 4, a 0, minus 10. Okay, so not much. Not much. Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. Yeah, there was a song. Gosh, was that from the first album from the Bare Naked Ladies, who I also saw when I was a business exec. I was in New York giving a speech at a convention, and I saw the Bare Naked Ladies because I just had nothing to do that night, and they were actually a lot of fun. Yeah, he was a shut-in for a while, and... he spent a year in bed. They mocked this in a quasi-Monty Python show called The Ruttles, which was a sort of takeoff on the Beatles. And so he wrote, I think a couple of years ago, I think he had two sets of memoirs, but he wrote, I Am Brian Wilson, a memoir. He wrote this a couple of years ago, shortly before he died. And yes, Brian Wilson had really significant mental health issues over the course of his life, like really, really significant mental health issues. Question. Une question. S'il vous plaît, por favor, a question. From a minus 10 to a plus 10, what do you think his childhood was like? Mental health issues, which we'll get into. Really bad mental health, like almost unbearable mental health issues. Minus 10 to plus 10. What do you think his childhood was like. 100, you are off the scale. Écoute, écoute, please do listen. Please do listen. Minus 5, 0. His childhood was probably horrible, probably a lot of neglect and verbal abuse. Minus 10, minus 8, minus 10. So, I mean, obviously it's kind of hard to gauge these things, but I will say that his childhood was probably a minus 7, and it went to like a minus 10 because of his drug use. Drugs are so dangerous, especially the hallucinogenic drugs. So, he says, he wrote, I also hear my dad in my head. His voice is louder than the others. What's the matter, buddy? You got any guts? Is this all about you? Why so many musicians? Rock and roll is two guitars, a bass, and drums. Any more than that is just about ego. So when he says, I also hear my dad in my head, that's not an analogy. That's not, I kind of have this inner parent. That's like there are yelling voices in his head, which he had to live with for like 60 years. Yelling, screaming, cursing, audible hallucination, voices in his head. Not like I'm feeling kind of down and you trace it back and it's a negative thing that you've dad said 20 years ago, like voices in his ear. He says, there are other voices too, along with Chuck Berry and Phil Spector and my dad. The other voices are worse. They're saying horrible things about my music. Your music is no damn good, Brian. Get to work, Brian. You're falling behind, Brian. Sometimes they just skip the music and go right for me. We're coming for you, Brian. This is the end, Brian. We are going to kill you, Brian. And he could only quiet the voices to some degree, like satanic tinnitus. He could only silence the voices to some degree by playing music, recording music, or being on stage, which he also kind of hated. He went through panic attacks, first of them starting in the early, mid-60s when they became famous. He was on a flight to Houston and completely had a, like, complete meltdown panic attack. He said with regards to the voices, I've heard them many days, and when I haven't heard them, I've worried about hearing them. And he would spend days just sitting on his chair or his couch, which has, he says, it's been covered and recovered because I have a habit of picking at the upholstery. And what does he think about? He says, usually it's that I really miss my brothers. Both of them are gone. Carl for almost 20 years, Dennis for more than 30. Carl died of lung cancer from being a chain smoker from his teens. And Dennis, if I remember rightly, drank like a fish and then was at a beach somewhere in the tropics. And he'd thrown some stuff into the ocean a year before, and he decided when he was blind drunk to go in and look for it or try and get whatever he'd thrown in the ocean back, and then he drowned. I mean, it's not quite, well, it's a little more than Bee Gees kind of mortality. He was addicted to cigarettes. He was addicted to alcohol. I think he was addicted to drugs, and he actually got up to over 300 pounds at one point. And then he went down to the low 200s, then went back up to 311 pounds. He said, the worst of them, the years, 1978, was one of the worst years of my life. I went into a mental hospital in San Diego and then called Marilyn, that's his second wife, and asked for a divorce. I couldn't control my thoughts and I couldn't control my body. It wasn't the first time I had felt like that, but in some ways it was the worst because of what I did to deal with it. I drank Bally High. God, I always think of that. Bally High, you'll find me. Sam Cooke does a great version of that. I drank Bally High wine, he says, and did cocaine and smoked cigarettes, and my weight went higher than ever. At one point, I bit the scales at 311 pounds. And then he got caught up with this really sinister doctor, Dr. Landy. Dr. Landy, tell me I'm not just a pedagogue. Oh, that's where that line comes from Bare Naked Ladies. Oof. Oof. So when Dr. Landy was charging him, I think over $100,000 in sort of 2024 dollars, over $100,000 a month to treat him, and got you know, screamed at him to make music. So they did albums together. He tried to do an album together with Brian Wilson. And he says, the first time, though, Dr. Landy had succeeded a little bit. His method was never perfect, but it gave me relief. The second time, though, there was no relief. Relief would have been a kind of freedom, and he didn't believe in freedom. He gave me more and more pills and called them vitamins. He sent girls to keep me company. He played games with me where he put his hand on my leg to see if I had feelings for anyone. He had barbecues at my house, but instead of inviting my friends or family, he invited his family and other doctors. He made big plans like going back to Hawaii and then to London, but the plans disappeared without explanation. He let me have a margarita every once in a while. He screamed so loud, it made me cry. Yeah. He got married at 22, and his first bride was 16. He had two brothers, so he had one house, three kids, two parents, my father, Murray, M-U-R-R-Y, who was actually, he sold industrial machinery, lathes, I think it was, and also was big into music and wrote songs. One of his songs ended up being played by the Lawrence Welk Orchestra and recorded by a couple of people. And so his father, Murray, his mother, Audrey. My mother was gentle, kind, and loving. Oh, God, to die and have learned so little about your life. See, the father was a violent brute, but the mother was gentle, kind, and loving. Then why did she marry and allow her children to be abused by a violent brute? He said, Mom didn't discipline us much, except to warn us that her dad might. If we were doing something bad, she would stand back a little bit and put up a finger. You better watch out, she'd say, or your dad is going to get you. Which means she would tell the dad, and the dad would be violent towards the children. He said, there were days with my dad that I wish never happened, and not just a few of them. They added up to months or even years, and they had a big effect on almost everything. At one point with his second wife, I think it was, he said, I told her that I was going to leave, not just the house, but her, the whole thing. I wasn't really serious, but I wanted to see how much it bothered her. She started to cry, which almost never happened. I tried to make her feel better, but I still felt bad. Oof. Now, I've heard sort of two stories on Brian Wilson. Was his right ear was dead. There had been, I think, one of the eighth nerves or something had been severed. And there were some reports that it happened because his father hit him on the head with a 2x4. Brian Wilson says that it happened because there was we'll get to that, was a bully. So he had functionally no ear. The doctor said it was like 95 to 98% dead. So he basically had to turn his head all the time, couldn't figure out where sounds were coming from, and so on. And his father, he said, he smoked a pipe and usually wore his glasses, partly because when he was younger, he had worked at Goodyear and there was an accident and he lost his left eye. Isn't that wild? Father loses the left eye. Kid loses the right ear. He said he was rough. His father was rough with all of us, me and my brothers. He grabbed us by the arms and shoved us and hit us with hands that were sometimes open and sometimes even closed, so straight up punching his children. He's talking about his grandfather, Buddy, his father's father. There was a story that once my dad did something that made his dad angry, and Buddy swung a lead pipe at the side of my dad's head. His ear was hanging off. They rushed him to the doctor, and eventually it was okay again. Now, this is how he says he lost his hearing. A kid hit me in the head with a lead pipe. His name was Seymour, I think, either his first or his last. The feeling was a shock at first. But the next day I realized I couldn't hear as well out of my right ear. I told my mom, and she took me to the doctor, who examined me and said that the eighth nerve in my head was severed. I say that my right ear is completely deaf. The doctors are more specific. Some say 98%, some say 95%. So now, why wouldn't you believe necessarily Brian Wilson about how he lost his hearing? Because he says that he makes things up. He doesn't like talking about his dad. He likes shifting blame. And certainly the memoir is a work that was written, of course, by him. And in songs, he constantly changed details and all of that. So it's hard to know. I've heard reports that it was his father who hit him. But two before, he says, a kid hit me on the head with a lead pipe. So who knows, right? He says, the way my dad treated me was tough, and it made me tougher. Yeah, that's something that people say, right? That's something that people say. Not true. I mean, he was a very fragile guy throughout the course of most of his life. He said, my dad had lots of mood shifts. He was a Cancer, born in July. Cancers have lots of mood shifts. So again, putting it to the placement of the stars when his father was born, all of this kind of nonsense. He said, maybe the worst thing about my dad was how he dealt with my fear. He couldn't deal with it. Whenever I got ahead, he would yell at me or slap me or call me a pussy. Lots of the grabbing and shoving started because something made me nervous and I didn't know what to do. He couldn't stand to see me that way, and he did everything wrong to get me feeling differently. He said, once when I was a teenager, my dad and I were sitting in the kitchen. My next door neighbor, Michael, came by. Hey, Brian, he said. I put up a hand. Michael, say that again. My dad said, I did. And he slapped me so hard across the face and said, don't ever yell at anybody. I was crying, not just because it hurt so much, but because it was so surprising. It happened again and again and again. At some point, it wasn't surprising. When he did put his hands on us, he tried to scare us. Sorry, when he didn't put his hands on us, he tried to scare us in other ways. He would take out his glass eye and make us look into the space where the eye used to be. Oh, God. Oh, my gosh. He would take out his glass eye and make us look into the space where the eye used to be. The identity, the personality, the eye, as in just the letter I. The hollow in the head where the eye was torn out. Ugh. He also said, Brian Wilson said, sometimes I provoked my dad. Once I took a shit on a plate and brought it to my dad. Here's your lunch, I said. He was sitting down with his pipe in his mouth. He didn't even stand up. Get in the bathroom, he said. Then he came in there and whipped the hell out of me. That one I may have deserved, but I was bringing the plate to him because of the times I didn't deserve it. Anyway, reading about his childhood, I mean, it's like Joe Jackson vibes, right? Joe Jackson vibes. And the anxiety, the depression, the susceptibility to exploitation. I mean, his doctor, he finally had to get a restraining order against Dr. Landy because Dr. Landy had changed Brian Wilson's will to the point where Dr. Landy was going to go to all of his money when he died. So, yeah, it was just wild stuff. And Dr. Landy ended up losing his license for a variety of reasons, which I think took far too long, but what the hell do I know? And the funny thing, of course, is that Brian Wilson grew up very close to the beach, never went to the beach. He hated the beach because he was very pale. He'd go there in jeans so the sun wouldn't get him, and he barely went there. He never surfed, and he had all of this surfing music and peppy music, right? I'm picking up good vibrations. Or, you know, the absolute classic with the Hammond organ intro, I wish they all could, well, California Girls, In My Room. In My Room, I think, was Paul McCartney's favorite song. The favorite song, not just of the Beach Boys, but of everyone. And yeah, it was just wild. I mean, quite a storied life, a lot of anxiety, get kicked out of the band on a regular basis because he was just unable to perform. And it is, it's a rough life, man. It's a rough life. And he said, Brian Wilson said, when he took drugs, that's when the voices started. And this is why, I mean, this is the really horrible thing. Drugs are probably less dangerous to people without traumatic childhoods. But if you didn't have a traumatic childhood, you're much less likely to try drugs because you don't need to self-medicate based upon that kind of, those kinds of problems. So he said, like, if there's one thing that I could go back and do differently, I wouldn't have done drugs, which I guess is the Syd Barrett thing, or Syd Barrett completely blew his mind out with drugs to the point where he got bald and obese and didn't know where he was really and ended up living with his mother, I think, for the rest of his life. And so, yeah, stay off drugs, man. But if you've had a traumatic childhood, you don't open up that portal. Don't open that, but you don't know what's going to come through. So according to Brian Wilson, what happened was he had this traumatic childhood. He found success very stressful. I mean, in 1 year, they recorded like material for 3 albums and did 100 shows. Like, that's mental. It was absolutely mental. I mean, and of course, all of the lovely and humane record executives were like, right? More, money. They just work and whip them like horses. I mean, there's a reason why Prince changed, the symbol for slave tattooed on his forehead, and George Michael stopped working, I think it was, with Sony after some lawsuits. I mean, it's brutal in the entertainment industry and incredibly predatory. Just go watch that documentary with Alanis Morissette. What was it, 30 years ago that Jagged Little Pill came out? What an album. Holy crap. But what she was preyed on as a teenager in the most appalling, monstrous ways. Just like Jennifer Lopez, right? I mean, warning everyone about how dangerous Trump is, never quite got around telling people about any danger that might be emanating from one P. Diddy and his infinite squishy waterfall of druggy oils. So he didn't have the voices in his head, although he certainly had people screaming at him, his father in particular screaming at him in his mind. And then he took the drugs and the portal, like, it opened up the back rooms, the trauma, it opened up and he lost the filter. You know, like, if you have had a bad parent, and I can't remember the last time I dreamt about my mother. I can't remember. I dreamt about my brother for the first time in a year or two the other night, but probably some stupid anniversary that I'm not aware of consciously. The brain keeps metronome time. So normally you have this sort of thoughts in your head that show up in dreams, or you'll get the feeling, but without the actual, you have to sort of drill down to get the language. But it seems like, and I think Brian Wilson was saying this, he said it fairly explicitly, you know, after the drugs, the voices were like auditory hallucinations. And it took his second wife, you know, to tell him, look, these voices have been saying they're going to kill you for like decades and they haven't done it yet. Right. So, he said it was a close to daily occurrence that he would just have these voices that would interrupt any peace he might be able to get a hold of. So this is why he became a sort of compulsive workaholic with music. And of course, if you're a workaholic with music, it's tough to be productive. Wilson is the greatest composer of pop music, a genius surpassing any others by orders of magnitude. Do you think? I mean, certainly his 60s oeuvre was fantastic. I mean, as far as pop goes, since I wouldn't classify the Rolling Stones as pop or early Led Zeppelin, as far as pop goes, probably only behind the Beatles. I mean, it was tough to get ahead in the 60s with the Beatles around. So, but again, I'm not, all I know is like there are 15 greatest hits. So I couldn't classify. Yes, and I don't know what, I mean, he wasn't involved in Kokomo, I think, which was the Beach Boys after he was gone. Kokomo, Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I want to take you. So, yeah, it's really terrible. Sorry, people are just finding ways to connect. Good. Steph really wasn't kidding in RTR when he said taking the book to heart would remove like 99% of relationships from your life. I mean, sorry to be pedantic. Oh, so pedantic. But it doesn't remove them. It just exposes them as not real relationships. Can you have a real relationship if you're not honest? No. All right, people talking to each other. Yeah, if you guys could do that off. Would Queen count as pop? I would not say so. I wouldn't say, as Queen doesn't do much pop. Queen started off, I mean, it's funny because they did some ragtime. I'm thinking Seaside Rendezvous, Good Old Fashioned Lover Boy. But earlier than that, they did rock and some lovely ballads. The Night Comes Down and Doing All Right, just lovely ballads off their first album. Queen 2 was just a real pastiche of wide variety. Go listen to March of the Black Queen. I mean, it's a joyful bounce around of schizo pinball ricochets just in terms of the Nevermore. It's lovely. Just Nevermore. Beautiful bit off the end of that. Forget your sing-alongs and your lullabies. Surrender to the city of the fireflies. Dance with the devil, beat with the band. To hell with all of you, hand in hand. Now it's time to be gone. It's really clever, funky, not funky. It's clever, half ragtime, half vaudeville, lovely falsetto in the middle. It is just, it's unclassifiable and really cool. It's really the only song that I particularly liked off Queen 2. And then, of course, you've got Sheer Heart Attack, which has a love of John Deacon's first song, Miss Fire, which I find kind of cute and fun. So I wouldn't say that they were rock for sure. And then they went into folk with 39. They did some fairly funky stuff with another one, Rides the Bus, another one, Bites the Dust. So I wouldn't say particularly classifiable, but I wouldn't put them in the pop category at all. It's not airy, frivolous, and breathy enough for pop. All right. Similar to Robin Williams and Matthew Perry, Brian Wilson had the pleasing, make others happy exterior with very deep pain behind it. Yeah, and I think it was early enough. I think it was early enough that people didn't really get how much it affects you, your childhood. Like, I just don't think, you know, I don't think people got it really as much at all. Forget your sing. All right, let's see here. What have I got here? Oh my gosh, that is the wrong library. Boom, boom, boom. No, I won't do that. So, all right, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show would be very deeply and humbly and gratefully appreciated. In each and every soul lies a man. Very soon you'll receive and discover. Yes, that's a lovely little bit. And no mortal man can sing Freddie Mercury's falsetto. Just go listen to the song Cool Cat on the much maligned First Side Sucks, Second Side is Great, Hot Space album. Yeah, it is a great song. And I don't know if it was drugs, but Queen, and in particular Freddie Mercury, is like ADHD, musical shuffleboard, musical chairs, musical sleight of hand. He's like a wizard. Oh, you like this bit? It's gone. Oh, this bit's cool? It's changed. And it's sort of like scenes from an Italian restaurant or Fool's Overture from Supertramp, where they basically had a bunch of different songs lying around, and rather than make them into a song, they just jammed together all of these scraps and had them in a bizarre way kind of work together. In terms of innovation in harmonics and the complexity of compositions, while at the same time sounding simple and catchy, Wilson has no peer. I've certainly heard musicians over the years say, you listen to a Beach Bar song and you think, oh, that's kind of cool and simple, and then you start to dig into it. And he was into some of the doo-wop groups from the 50s, the Four Horsemen in particular, and the complexity of the arrangements, because he only had one ear. I got to jam his ear right up next to the speakers. His father taught him a lot about harmonics, and he just was able to unpack these harmonics in a way that was just amazing. And if you've ever really unpacked, like I do this with arguments. Like I just did this show today on the ethics of sex workers online and where they fit in UPB. And I see like the skeletal structure, the sinews and the tendons of an argument. I see the argument and it explodes in my mind. You know, like they used to have these exploded diagrams. I'm sure they still do. Here's the engine. Exploded out, you know, it looks like this. Not actually exploded, but sort of separated conceptually. So when I look at an argument, it disassembles in my mind. And that's because I've been immensely self-critical over the years. I don't do to anyone else's arguments anything different from what I do to my own arguments. I mean, I have a lot of arguments that come to mind and I abandon them because they're invalid. They don't work. They self-contradict, right? So, and I was doing this for years. I used to have like massive debates with myself about good or bad arguments. So I see an argument and I can just pull it apart because I see all of the basic premises. I see all the way from the metaphysics, the epistemology, the ethics, the politics, and so on. And I often will see the psychological motivations behind the arguments. So with regards to looking at, you know, whether it's deductive or inductive reasoning, the syllogisms, they just, and I used to be able to do this with computer code back in the day. Like you need something done, I would just be able to break it into start here, call this, do that, and just explode it. It would all just disassemble in my mind. I could see all of the source components and see what worked and what doesn't. I suppose if you're really good at mechanics, you can listen to a car and know what the problem is, right? Or, you know, that old myth, I think it's a myth that, you know, the indigenous population could put their ears on the train tracks and hear the train coming from miles and miles away. So, yeah, I think that Brian Wilson certainly was, without a doubt, a musical genius. I mean, there's no question in my mind that he was a musical genius. I wish he'd had a bit more sustainability, but again, given the mental health issues and so on, he just didn't. And maybe he did, but I'm just not aware of his later work. But even the fact that I'm pretty into music and not aware of his later work is somewhat telling. And I listened to music for the singers. And I'm a slave to the singer, and Brian Wilson's voice was, you know, to me kind of thin and not particularly rich or flexible. I mean, he had a lovely falsetto, of course, but a very complex writer. And, you know, there's nothing more powerful in a way than the seemingly simplistic things that turn out to be massively complex when you disassemble them. And that is UPB. And I think the equivalent would be what someone like Brian Wilson was doing, in particular with harmonics. Do you like Ronnie James Dio? No idea. I mean, no, I don't like him or dislike him. I don't have the first clue. What that is, man? I do not know. Just like Brian Wilson did. All right, let me see. Can I get to the story of the kitten? Bum bum ba-dum, bum ba-da-dum, bum bum ba-dum, bum ba-da-da. All right, so let's see here. Can I log on? All right, if you have any other questions or comments or issues or challenges, I am thrilled to hear about them. looking at my old, what have I got here? The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels from Alex Epstein, who I interviewed like way ago. Who killed the American family? Phyllis Schlafly, Treasure Island, Pride and Prejudice, Myths about Ayn Rand, Mugged, Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right, 50 Shades of Grey for a review. Oh yeah, Anonymous Conservative, the Evolutionary Psychology Behind Politics. Ayn Rand and the something-something. Aesop's Fables, I did that with my daughter. Paul Craig Roberts, The Failure of Laissez-Faire Capitalism. Wow. Blacklisted by History. M. Staunton Evans. Wow. Dinesh D'Souza, The Big Lie. Adios America. Freud, The Making of an Illusion. Yeah, that was for my Freud presentation that I never got around to. Human Accomplishments by Charles Murray. The Red Thread by the great Diana West, who I also interviewed. Anyway, you don't need to know all of this, but I thought it was kind of neat. And this is an old account I haven't used in forever. All right, let's get back, see if you have any other questions or issues. So James says, I've had that similar experience as well in software. I'd be able to move in and out of the architecture to the detail and understand the universe. Yeah, yeah. Wilson's magnum opus, the album Smile. Oh, that's with the lowercase I. The album Smile that he abandoned in 1967 and completed in 2004 is a must hear. All right, thank you. Stefan, I haven't heard you speak about Thomas Sowell that much. What is your impression of him, and do you appreciate his work? I like Dr. Sowell. I hate to say it, but, you know, it's like libertarianism 101. It's kind of basic. And I think he rejects the IQ arguments without really addressing the science behind them. So, I don't mean to be overly fussy, but when I know something quite detailed about a topic and somebody else dismisses it out of hand, I become suspicious of everything, right? I mean, obviously I'm not perfect, love to be corrected and all of that. So if there's anything I'm saying ever that's incorrect, please let me know. But when I'm fairly deeply knowledgeable, and of course I interviewed 17 world experts on the field of IQ, so when I'm deeply knowledgeable about a topic and somebody else blithely dismisses it without any good argument, then I have concerns about everything else that I'm not an expert on. Do you know what I mean? So if I know something about IQ and then somebody dismisses IQ arguments with no real understanding or basis based on, I guess, just some sort of tribalism, then they lose their luster for me, because it means that I can't really trust them on the things I'm not an expert on, if that makes sense. And look, I'm not a big expert on IQ, but I know fairly well about it. And if you don't understand IQ, you just can't understand the world. I mean, to me, everybody who just like avoids that whole topic, it's like, okay, like you may have some interesting things to say, but you can't really explain much about the world. So I like him. I've read some of his books, the one about the Southern rednecks and their sort of back to the British culture and so on. Interesting stuff. I like, of course, the argument that I think he made the argument. I'm not sure if it was just him, but in a very emphatic way, you know, there are no solutions. There are only trade-offs. So, I mean, I like his stuff. I think it's interesting, but again, and look, it's not that people have to be perfect. Lord knows. Lord knows I'd be the last person to say that people have to be perfect, but can they be corrected? Right? Or can they be corrected? Right? So, like, hundreds of billions of dollars have been poured into trying to close the gap in IQ. At some point, I mean, do people talk about this? Anyways, I know some people are, and it's becoming a bit more of a topic, but so, it takes a lot for me to trust a thinker. You know, it takes a lot for me to trust a thinker, because you have to rely upon the thinker's base integrity and willingness to think the unthinkable and self-correct their most foundational propositions and so on. Like, you really, really have to. For me, it's very hard, because I've gone through this process. I can't even tell you how many times. It's so sad. And it speaks to my optimism, if not necessarily my skepticism, which I should probably have more of, but I'm very eager to be positive about things and people, right? And so I've just gone through this a number of times where I will elevate someone to a position or situation of trust, high trust. And then I just happen to know something about a particular topic that's fairly deep. I go to this person, and then they just say something completely wrong. I don't know, should I get into details? Probably doesn't matter. I think we've all gone through this process. You hold someone in high esteem, and they just get something ridiculously wrong, and don't correct, right? Don't correct. And I know some people think that was me with COVID. I get that people think that was me with COVID, but I sure as heck never took that vaccine, and I sure as heck said that the government should not get involved in restricting people's liberties, and I sure as heck said, just as the lockdowns were starting, that they were going to cause far more harm than good. Now, of course, I was also worried and alarmed that what I perceived to be a bioweapon had come out, that it was going to have some pretty sinister effects, and the Alpha strain was pretty rough. It was pretty rough, man. Some people got really sick from that. And then, of course, it went to Omega began to sort of calm down a little bit. But yeah, so I know that some people, I think that hindsight is 2020, blah, 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 right? I was concerned. And I really did, and this was, again, partly my optimism. I really did think that borders would be closed because of the pandemic. And that was just my optimism. So I suppose I got that somewhat wrong. I mean, I knew that the Democrats wanted to keep the borders open, but yeah, it was something else. All right. Steph, do you still think people should get out of the cities? Escalating riots and war tension seem to suggest it's still a good idea. Well, so smart people generally, like smart people congregated in the cities until the 1960s, and then smart people have just been sort of pushed out of the cities. Welfare state and crime and single motherhood and all of the attendant emotional and criminal problems that kind of come pouring out of that. So generally, smart people just have to move further and further out. I mean, intelligence is concentrated in the cities in a young republic, and then intelligence gets further and further out for reasons of safety and peace and quiet as you get older. So I don't think that cities are particularly ideal. You might want to be beyond the bus and subway route at some point. It is just a mathematical fact that the government's going to run out of money. And what happens when the government runs out of money? Well, the single moms send out all their feral sons into the streets to get the pre-built brick pallets of rioting, and it's just going to be wild. And it's going to be wild because there won't be an immediate solution other than violence, right? So, I mean, it won't be like you can just, oh, we'll, you know, go home and we'll up your welfare. Like, there will be no money, right? So I do think that cities are not going to be where the most peaceful future is, particularly the inner cities. Oh, yeah, Hans Hoppe talking about spanking, and then was it Tom Woods and Jeffrey Tucker who just kind of smiled and said nothing? That was not great. Jordan Peterson was not solid against corporal punishment. He also doesn't really talk about IQ. So, you know, there's like just things that. Cities are a mecca for degenerate behavior. Oh, not in their founding. No, in their founding, they are an escape from the degenerate behavior of the countryside. So, all right. Yeah, somebody says I was a huge fan of Jordan Peterson, but after watching Jordan versus atheists, this is not the same person. The complexity, The complexity of language is there, but the depths of truth are gone. He's not the same person he was 9 years ago in the Channel 4 interview. I mean, look, we've all been beaten up and down the playground over the last 10 years, right? Is there really any functional free speech in the West? No, not really. Not really. Not really. Tucker was there, but not Woods. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Who else was there, though? I think there were three people there. I appreciate that. Thank you for the correction. Last live stream, you brought up the evolution of the music industry, saying people just want access to the music, i.e. streaming, and are fine with not owning the music. You then said you think Bitcoin will follow the same evolution. Can you elaborate on the Bitcoin point? I can. I certainly can. Kinsella. And two, I don't recognize. Thank you. And I apologize for Tom Woods for mentioning him. This is from years ago, and I guess I just have clusters of people in my head. So it was Stephen Kinsella and Jeffrey Tucker. Is that right? And I mean, they didn't have to get into a big fight. They can just say, you know, I respectfully disagree. I don't think that corporal punishment is good. I think it's a violation of the non-aggression principle, but I understand it's a challenging topic. So I just wanted to mention that. You can do it in a way that's not big and confrontational, but because, you know, they want people to have a lot of courage in order to build a free society. And if you can't mention what you believe in to Hans Hoppe, not sure that you're displaying the kind of courage that would be really inspiring to others. All right. And again, we all have our fumbles and our failures, but whatever, right? So with regards to Bitcoin, it's simply a matter that the existing paradigm, people fight to keep it until the market bypasses it, right? So people were fighting to keep, you know, CDs and DVDs and all this kind of stuff until there were torrents and Napster and so on, and the Pirate Bay back in the day and so on. And then people are just like, we'll fight to keep it, we'll fight to keep it. And then there's just a whoosh when people say, we're just going to have to embrace a new thing, right? I mean, this happens in science, right? Science, as the old saying goes, advances one funeral at a time. So the people are, we've got to have fiat currency, we've got to have fiat currency. And fiat currency is like, it's like a drug, and Bitcoin is the rehab, right? Bitcoin is the reality check, the cold water to the NAS reality check, because it is non-politicized currency, and all politicized currency destroys civilization. Like, and there's no, I don't even want to have a tiny little bit of reservation about that. Politicized money destroys civilizations, and we have too much technology for it to be safe in that way, right? All right, any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems? Yeah, the Luddites during the Industrial Revolution tried that, of course, for sure, and the cavalry tried that, even the the knights tried that when they could be unseated by arrows and so on. So, Yeah, I mean, somebody's saying, I watched an anime called Frieren recently. I can't really, I mean, I guess I could watch it at some point, although I'm pretty busy with my novel and the show and all of the parenting and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, if you're enthusiastic about a thing, I can't really talk about it in the show because I haven't watched it. So, and the odds of me watching it over the next little while are pretty low, pretty low. So I appreciate your enthusiasm, but I can't really do much. Do much with it. All right. A bit of a low donation. Yeah, we got one donation at Free Domain. So bit of a low donation situation. If you're listening to this later and you could help out, I would really appreciate it if you find any of my comfort giving regarding the attack on Iran. To be helpful, I would appreciate you dropping a tip at freedomain.com/donate. I really, really would appreciate it. He says, I know I asked before, but timing was a bit off. Hard to watch much with all that. I understand. Yeah, I honestly don't. Maybe when I'm finished my novel, which I don't even know how long it's going to be, but it's I love these characters too much to let them go. I just do. I'm going to stay with them as long as humanly possible. All right. Well, thank you, Bronx Trader. I appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, so much. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Don't forget to check out the documentaries. They're all great. And freedomain.com/books for all the free books. You can share them as you see fit. You are donating next week. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. And lots of love from up here, my friends. Take care. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.